Learner's Permit, Thursdays on my YouTube. Subscribe today. The Night Pants Nation Tour continues. Arlington, November 11th through the 13th. Cleveland, December 9th through the 11th. And La Jolla, December 17th through the 19th. All tickets are available at ryansickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pants Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. Listen, if I'm coming to your city, and I'm coming, Arlington, Virginia, get your tickets to the Night Pants Nation Tour. We've already had killer weeks in Phoenix, in Indy, in Baltimore, in Brea. Now I'm hitting Arlington, Virginia. After that, coming in Cleveland. After that, boom, La Jolla. All right, that's our 2021. So come out, get your tickets at ryansickler.com. And thank you again for your support for this show. I love seeing this thing grow. It's just, I love my job, and I love sitting here listening and talking to everybody highlight their lowlights. So please hit that subscribe button. Again, I say it, it means nothing to you and everything to us, all right? Also, the Patreon continues to grow. Every month it gets bigger. It's the wildest shit I've ever heard. I told you we had a girl with two pussies. She came to meet me in Baltimore. One pussy now. She's the best. I fucking love it. We're solving cold cases. We got people who clean up murders. We got people getting brains blown out in front of them on them. Okay? We got all kinds of people figuring out their dad ain't their dad. We got people doing all kinds of shit out there. It is the best show going right now. It's $5 a month. If you sign up for a year, you get a month free. All right? And you get the Honeydew a day early, ad-free at no additional cost. Okay? So if you or someone you know has that story that has to be heard, please submit it to honeydewpodcast@gmail.com so we can get on and highlight the lowlights with y'all. All right, there it is. That's the biz. And you know what we do over here? We highlight the lowlights with y'all. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. I'm very excited to have this guest on here, his first time here. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Eddie Ift, y'all. Welcome to the Honeydew, Eddie Ift.
Thanks. I you know, I've listened to your podcast, but I never really thought of it as though that's what you do. And I was like, when you were like, hey, what do you want to talk about? I'm like, there's so many.
Well, I get some people like, we can just talk about whatever. I'm like, nah, that's not this podcast. We're not talking about whatever. We're talking about some of the worst shit that you've had in your life.
I'm generally a happy person.
Yeah, you always seem happy when I see you.
And I feel like I've been very lucky. I've had a very good life, but there are many. I'm getting old. I've had a lot of.
How old are you now?
Just turned 50.
Did you really?
Yep.
Oh, congrats, bro. Yeah, 50. All right. Yeah. You look fucking great, dude.
Yeah. I told somebody the other day, they go, how old are you? I go, 38. And they didn't flinch.
Nothing.
They didn't go, oh, come on. You know, they were just like, and I thought it was kind of funny. And then I was telling my wife that today, and my wife is not even 30. She's 37. And when I said it, I was like, oh, this must be weird to her because, you know, she is.
Right. Yeah. She's like, no.
I'm like,
well, before we begin, promote everything you'd like to promote, and then we're going to sit down and chat it up.
Love the promotion part. This is my favorite part. No, I am on tour starting this week. I go out every single weekend until mid-February.
All right.
And I am in a different city every week. It's all at eddieift.com. I am from Anchorage, Alaska, down to Key West, Florida. I am covering the whole country. And have to make up for the last 15 months. And I'm also shooting a special on January 22nd at the Irvine Improv in California. So that will be my new special, which tentatively is going to be called Man Child. And it's about how I basically want to keep living as a child and never take anything seriously.
Peter Pan.
I am Peter Pan. I don't want any responsibility. I just want to have fun.
Well, let's talk about, because you want to talk about something very specific. I say some people come in with a life story. Some people come in and talk about a specific struggle. But this one's interesting to me because it's a career thing.
Yeah.
So tell me, what happened? Things are going well enough. And we're talking about in comedy, or was this the shift to get into comedy?
Life was hard for me up until comedy. Like nothing came easy for me. I was a failure at pretty much everything.
What's some of the things you tried that you failed at?
Like school. If I was going to be the bad at it, I'd be the worst.
Okay.
Like I was kicked out of grade school, high school, college, everything.
You were for what?
Oh yeah. Grade school, they said I took a wig off a nun, but I didn't. No, I didn't do it.
But that's what they said.
They said I did because to this day, everyone still says I did it. Even kids that were there. Like, Eddie F. did it. And I'm
it's
like,
that like Berenstain Bear thing?
Yeah.
The Mandela effect?
I have no problem saying it. It was Mark Drischler did it. Mark Drischler did it.
Fuck you, Mark Drischler.
Yeah. Mark Drischler did it.
He probably still has that wig.
And I remember when it happened, I was like, we were supposed to do it together. And I wasn't man enough to do it. Mark was like, and I think Mark was kind of an orphan. And I was like, come on, you know, you won't get in as much trouble as I will. Yeah. You're not.
I have people who love me.
Because we had gotten in trouble prior to that. I went to a Catholic school. We had gotten in trouble for one day. Our teacher said, hey, we're going to make this, we're going to all divide up in groups and we're going to make an organization and you're going to run your organization. What it does, it's going to be like religiously affiliated and blah, blah, blah. I forget what class it was. So me and my friends made the, this is eighth grade. We made the Christian United Nations Together.
I spelled it in my head, cunt. And yeah.
We were the cunts.
You're the cunts.
And we had our emblem was a triangle with lips in the middle.
Come on, No one caught this?
I swear to God. And our teacher's name was Sister Colette, who we used to constantly call Sister Clit. We would, like, you would raise your hand. You go, Sister Clit, Sister Clit, Sister Clit, Sister Clit, Sister Clit. And she was mean. She was an evil woman.
Yeah.
Evil. And she'd called us all Bud. She'd be like, Bud, Bud, Bud. And I just hated being called Bud. I remember one of my friends was under his desk. She slammed the desk on his hands. She was all just very mean. And so we knew she had a wig. We would walk behind her. We would see it. We would touch it sometimes and play with it when we're standing behind her. And we're like, what's
longer hair? Like, is a longer
no,
wig?
No, it was a big curly gray wig.
But with the habit? Or like
no,
wearing,
she didn't wear a habit. Okay. But I think that's what happens is they wear habits for so long. It kind of makes – look, I know now this was very cruel and mean. Like, I was a little kid, didn't understand that I realized it was mean right after it happened. I'll tell you that. We call her Wiggy. Like, that was our nickname for her, Wiggy, and everybody's like, Wiggy. So the whole thing was like, we're going to take Wiggy's wig off, and we're going to run it up the flagpole. That's what we're going to do. So we had a whole plan. We left our bikes outside. We're going to ride away on our bikes. And so we waited for the day to do it, and everybody talked about it. It was like build up forever. And Mark, I can't believe he did it to this day, that he had the balls to do it. He ran up behind her. I think I distracted her or something, so I was involved. But he did it, and he ran away with it.
Like, he snatched it off her head?
Yeah, and he got on his bike, and he rode away. I actually got on the bus. It gets worse. Got on the bus.
Let me get on the slowest moving fucking thing.
I got on the school bus with my brother and two girlfriends of mine. And the girls had brought eggs on the bus, and we egged the crossing guard on the way home. So...
This is just shit.
Terrible.
Listen, I would have been right back there throwing them with you. Yeah. That's how we were.
They were like double yolk eggs. And,
yeah, oh yeah.
And his name was Mr. Krustofik. And we called him Mr. Krustofuck. And this is Catholic school. This is Catholic schools. And like, so he worked our lunchtime. He was our recess kind of like guy that oversaw us. And he was, you feel like these guys are authoritarian and they're mean and everything. And so then at like the second or third stop of the bus, there was an intersection and he worked there crossing it. And we just windows down, just egged. This is after the wig incident. But I remember after the wig came off, I was like jumping up and down the streets laughing so hard. And a girl who I kind of like didn't have a crush on, but like looked up to and respected and, you know, great family, everything, who was a friend of mine, just came up to me and like shoved me and was like, why would you do that? Like, that was terrible. And everybody else was laughing. And she kind of like gave me this eye contact where I went. And I just felt so small. Like, why was I involved in this? And So they said that I was too immature to go on in school. So they sent me back to eighth grade again.
No.
Yeah. So
you had to repeat eighth grade for that?
I had to repeat eighth grade. So I went to a public school then for eighth grade. That's not when the military school thing happened. They were going to send me to that school.
We're about not to talk about anything thought you were going to come in here. So, military school.
It's like therapy for me. So I've never gone to therapy, so podcasts for me are therapy. Yeah.
So you got, excuse me, so now you're in a public school repeating the grade you just were in.
And my mom said, I never brought a book home. And I was like, why should I? I already did this. And when they had parent-teacher conferences, they called everyone in. You know, like all the parents would come in and you would go room to room and meet with each teacher. My parents came home from the very first parent-teacher conference and said that like there was like a special room that all the teachers came to and it was just my parents and they sat around them and they were like—
They met your parents.
Yeah.
I wouldn't meet the teacher night.
Yeah.
It was me, Eddie, it was parents.
My dad goes, the janitor and the cafeteria lady are there. Like, they're like—
The janitor's in like, there. The crossing guard's in here.
They're like, this kid's— They thought there was something like seriously psychologically wrong with me. So they said he can't come back. I remember my mom crying, my mom coming home and crying. It made me so sad because I actually liked the public school and I liked all my friends. And she's like, they don't want you back. Like, you can't come back. And I was like, well, what are we going to do now? And my dad's like, I'll tell you what we're going to do. And my dad was like, you're going to go to military school.
You went from Catholic school to military school.
Yeah. And I got scared. I was like, I don't want to go to military school. I don't. And so I threatened my parents. I was like,
where is this? What state is this?
So I was in Pittsburgh, but they were going to send me to Valley Forge Military Academy in Philadelphia, where they filmed Taps.
Yep.
And I had just remembered the movie Taps because my
Timothy Hutton, right? Yeah, yeah.
Great movie. Yeah. Great line from that. Sean Penn, when he auditioned for Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and the director asked him what part he played in Taps, he goes, I was the conscience of the film. Says that at like 20 years old.
At their audition, too.
I was the conscience of the film. Anyway, it looked so scary to me. I was like, I just don't find any fun in that at all. So I was like, I'll go AWOL. And I was like, if you send me there, I will jump the fence.
You're telling your dad.
Yeah, I will jump the fence and you will never see me again. And I promise you, like, you cannot do this to me. So there was this other school they might have sent me to. And finally, the school basically said if I went and got like psychologically tested, then
this is the public
saw
school
a psychiatrist
again.
And they would let me back in if they figured it out. So I went and got tested and they're like, yeah, he's okay. You know, he's just a kid. Let him be fucking back in. So I got back in. And then high school, I got kicked out a bunch of times. Never like really permanently. I mean, there was one time that was kind of like, and it was a public school. So they're like, where do you go after public school? There's nowhere to go. And back to like failure at everything. I honestly tried at school. Like, I was bad, but I think like just being bad, I set all the teachers off, pissed everyone off that no one would give me a chance. So, but I just couldn't understand how bad of this struggle was. And luckily I found out right around my junior year that I was pretty good at track at like 110 meter high hurdles. And one of the coaches sat me down, a football coach who also coached track. And he was like, listen, you suck at football. Like,
you were playing at least.
Yeah, I was playing. And I was always like sixth man on the basketball team or like, you know, I was like, okay on the football. I was never good or great. And I think I wanted to be great and I couldn't. I just couldn't be. And this coach sat me down and he was like, stop playing football. You're not going to college on a scholarship. No one's going to take you. It's not doing anything for you. And he goes, and you're going to get hurt and you have a chance of going to school on a scholarship on track. Like, you're good. And I made the state championships. And literally, like, the track coach from the University of Pittsburgh came to my last track practice before I went to the state championships. And he was like, you going to fuck up if we let you in? And I was like, I promise I won't, like, please let me in. Please. I promise I won't fuck up anymore. He's like, all right, we're going to let you in. You know, you're going to come run for us, but
on scholarship.
I ran on a small scholarship in the beginning and I ended up losing it later. That's another story. But
why?
It's there's so much like.
What did you do to have your scholarship?
Yeah, I don't want to get into it because it involves like.
Don't if you can't say it, don't say it.
It's just there was an argument over like who deserved it and who didn't, and I felt like there was someone was being rewarded that I was beating all the time, and I didn't think they were getting it for merit. There was underlying circumstances for them getting it, so it was a long story, but. But college, the whole time I was running track, I was in a fraternity just getting drunk every fucking day. And I wasn't but
still going out and
smoking. I wasn't doing well at track because I was like, time to party. And so I wasn't focused because I there were like two people at my track meets. I'd go to track meets and there'd be like two people in the crowds. And I'm like, there were more in my high school track meets. This sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm riding a bus and I was the only white kid on the team and they were like abusing me for a while. And, then they got to be, I got to be really good friends with all the guys on the track team, but, I just liked partying more. I was like, I'm going to party all the way through college. So I got kicked out of college for starting a skydiving club. And
you started a skydiving club?
I started the Panther skydiving club.
I was hoping you bring back the cunts.
I should have. Can't believe in eighth grade we were the.
I can't either. Listen, in high school we did a talent show where we were the floating semen, S-E-A-M-E-N. Okay, and we wore.
No one caught you.
No one caught it. No, we had a wave across the whole front of the fucking stage that said the floating semen, and we wore. With four of us, we wore like those orange life preservers, no shirts, and a pair of shorts, and did a routine to Super Freak, literally like 5 days before MC Hammer's version came out. We couldn't even get over it, and no one ever fucking caught it. But it's on VHS somewhere out there. The floating semen, yeah.
There's so much innuendo.
But it
with
wasn't
kids.
The cunts. I mean, in eighth grade, we were at least, I think we were seniors.
We had a group when I was a freshman. I think it was the seniors showed up at a dance one time, a Halloween dance, dressed as ghosts. But they were clearly Klan members. Like clearly.
What's that patch on your ghost outfit right there?
I mean, the pointiest hood, just looked exactly like a Klan outfit. And I remember them catching them and saying, no, like, this is back in 1990, you know, or 1987 or something. And they were like, no, out. And they're like, we're ghosts.
We're ghosts.
And they're like, no, you're not. Get the fuck out of here. But they never caught the cunts. Oh, actually, she did. Sister Colette caught the cunts. She took us in the hallway. She lined us all up in the hallway, made us sit, close the door, everybody else in the room. She's like, I've been a registered nurse for 70 years. She was so old. She's like, I don't know how many years. And she's like, and you think I don't know what this symbol is? Because it was a triangle with lips in the middle. I didn't even know what it was. One of the other guys like drew it. And I'm like, I've never seen a vagina. You know,
pussy lips on a triangle. Yeah. I love it.
And she's like, if you don't think I know what this is and I know what you're doing. And so she goes, I want to know who's responsible for this. So she made us talk amongst the like four or five of us and figure out who did it and who was responsible. And I swear we all like looked at Mark Drischler and we're like, Mark, we all got parents.
You got the wig.
You got to take it.
Yeah.
You got to take it for the rest of us. And he was just like, all right, I got it. And I mean, he just got like they went after him for this. And we were like, sorry, Mark. And then he went. No, the wig was after that.
Oh, the wig was after the cunts.
Wig was after the cunts. And but College Panther Skydiving Club, I got kicked out. And so I got back into college. It was. I basically embezzled money is what they came after me for because I figured out the system and I was involved politically at college and all my friends were all politically involved. And so it was like, I was just like a mobster. I mean, I was like, oh, you mean you can get government contracts? It was the University of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And I was like, wait, so if we just submit an application to the allocations committee and we start a group, like I started a club where we would go skydiving, that's legal. But you're supposed to then advertise to the entire university that they can join your club.
Anyone can join, yeah.
No ads anywhere. Just me and my 10 buddies. One
jumping out of planes.
One who didn't even go go to Pitt.
And you get credits for this too?
No, you don't get credits, okay. But the school pays for it. Like they give us like $30,000.
Get the fuck
out of here. I swear to God. So we got allocated all this money.
How often were you skydiving?
So this is where it gets a little weird. The guy who went with us, my friend that didn't go to college, was Camp Kevin. Remember when I've told you all about the guy with the... So Kevin came with us. We go skydiving, Beaver Valley skydiving. This like rinky dink location. They've got a bar there. And I wrote them a check for like the amount, the total amount. And I said, just we'll work it off. You know, give us a credit. And we can show up whenever we want and jump out of planes. And you just take it off our thing. And so they were like, all right, give us the check, you know. And they had a bar there. So we would drink at the bar. And the school was paying for it. But
so you made a tab.
Yeah.
You made a fucking tab.
I feel like I'm like nervous talking about this like statute of limitations. And
there are certain things in life that are difficult to understand, but knowing how to feel your best shouldn't be one of them. Everlywell can help you learn more about your body so you can finally take control of your health and wellness on your own time. Everlywell offers affordable at-home lab tests that give you trusted physician-reviewed results. Choose from tests including food sensitivity, metabolism, sleep and stress, thyroid, and so much more. Here's how it works. Everlywell ships your test straight to your door with everything needed for a simple sample collection. You return the test to a CLIA-certified lab with a prepaid shipping label. Then your physician-reviewed results and insights are sent to your device in just days. I did this, all right? Over a million people have trusted Everlywell with their at-home lab testing, and I did it. It's easy. You prick your own finger. You just drop blood on the little card and then you send it off after it dries out and boom, you get your results in a couple days. I got mine and I was pleasantly surprised. I did a food sensitivity test and I was sensitive to ginger and like it was a mild sensitivity to something else that wasn't even really relevant. So nothing actually. I was excited to find that out. But now I know why when I eat sushi, my stomach bothers me. It's the ginger. All right. Boom. Thank you, Everlywell. And for listeners of the show, Everlywell is offering a special discount of 20% off an at-home lab test at everlywell.com/honeydew. That's everlywell.com/honeydew for 20% off your at-home lab test. Everlywell.com/honeydew. What if getting your groceries put time back into your week instead of taking it away? With the weather getting colder outside, stay cozy inside and let Imperfect Foods deliver your intentionally sourced groceries with just a few clicks. Imperfect Foods is a grocery delivery service offering an entire line of sustainable groceries that taste delicious and reduce waste. Plus, your order will arrive on the same day each week. On average, Imperfect Foods customers save 6 to 8 pounds of food from lesser outcomes with every order. And unlike on-demand delivery companies, Imperfect delivers weekly by neighborhood, a unique model that produces 25 to 75% fewer emissions than individual trips to the grocery store. And goodbye to packaging guilt. Imperfect Foods is the only national grocery delivery company that makes it easy to return your packaging after every order. They sent me a box of stuff. I got eggs, I got peppers, I got cheese, I got mushrooms. I had so much stuff. And then my neighbor, Jen, I was like, you got to try this stuff out. She cooked it all up and it was delicious. Right now, Imperfect Foods is offering my listeners 20% off your first 4 orders when you go to imperfectfoods.com and you use the promo code Honeydew. Again, that's 20% off your first 4 orders. That's up to an $80 value at imperfectfoods.com when you use promo code Honeydew. Imperfectfoods.com and use code Honeydew. With so many stressors in life, it's difficult to maintain effective nutritional habits and give our bodies the nutrients it needs to thrive. AG1 by Athletic Greens, the category-leading superfood product, brings comprehensive and convenient daily nutrition to everybody. And to help each of us be our best, they simplify the path to better nutrition by giving you the one thing with all the best things. All right, one tasty scoop of AG1 contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic green superfood blend, and more in one convenient daily serving. I take it every day. I drop it in my water. Boom, I'm out the door. I'm taking it in my water bottles in the car. Like a lot of times, I really do forget to drink water, and I'm drinking soda or whatever else. So I take a water bottle in the car now. I put Athletic Greens in it, make sure I have it with me. It's lifestyle friendly. So whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, it contains less than 1 gram of added sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, or artificial anything while keeping it tasting good. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit athleticgreens.com/honeydew today. Again, simply visit athleticgreens.com/honeydew to take control of your health and give AG1 a try. Now, let's get back to the dude. I heard a story one time about Jerry Jones, who owns the Cowboys, yeah. One of his sons. I guess he gave him a bunch of like money, right? And he went to the titty bar and took that money and said, look, here's what we're going to do. On the drive into the stadium, there's a bunch of billboards apparently on the way in. And he's like, I can't give you the one like right up by the stadium because you're a titty bar, but I could give you about the third one in. And he's like, but I could do it for this. And they're like, done. So he made an agreement that they would give him like stripper bucks. And they could put, so he created a tab at the titty bar so they could put their thing up there and then he would just go there and get free lap dances and drinks.
Can you imagine that?
Unlimited titties and drinks.
Unlimited lap dances. just you'd be yeah, like, yeah. I'm ready again.
Yeah, like, give me five of you. I want all five of you.
The skydiving club.
So you make a tab at this bar, but did you ever go skydiving?
Yeah. Right. We went and scary as shit. The plane caught on fire. It was just a night. It was a nightmare.
The plane caught. That's a plane I would be happy to jump out of.
That's what I said. One of the funny things. One of my buddies, who I can't talk about because he's like super successful businessman now, in the middle of like his turn to jump out, you this is like a Cessna and you're doing static line jumps. So you get out all by yourself onto the wing, you hold onto the beam that holds the wing up, and then the jump master goes, go, and you let go, and you like fly out. He gets out on the wing and he goes, wait. And they pull him back in and he goes, my shoulder just popped out of its socket. And my friend Kevin looks at me and goes, pussy. And they go, oh, well, we're sorry, dude. You know, we're going to have to go into emergency procedure. And he's like, huh? They're like, we can't land with you in the plane. It's too much weight. The plane can't land with all this weight. It can take off, but it can't land. So we're going to need you to sit right on the edge and just roll out, like hold your shoulder and roll out. And he's like, but I can't. It hurts too bad. He's like, just hold your shoulder into place. He's like, you're going to roll out. He's like, the chute will open. And he's like, and see if you can then direct yourself down by grabbing the toggles, you know. So my friend's like, he's like, you have to. So he's like, 3, 2, 1. My friend goes out. And the guy looks at me, the jump master, and goes, works every time.
Yeah, I was going to say, what plane can't land with one person? It can only be the pilot when we land. This plane's so, good for taking off, but not landing.
So what happened was I had literally the editor of the newspaper on my skydiving club. I had the president of the student government board. I had,
oh, you had
the
right
head of the allocations
right
committee. So one of my fraternity brothers was dating this girl who was, you know, that she was like, what's her name? From Nancy Pelosi. She just wanted to look into everything and find out where there was injustice. The editor of the newspaper came after it, or the assistant editor of the newspaper came after it first. She's like, going to write this big article about it. The editor of the newspaper buries it. He now works at Politico.
He's doing that shit early on.
He buries the article. They come after him for burying the article. And I'm like, oh, we're fucking going down. And I remember like I was threatening people. I went up to the girl, the assistant editor. I was like, I know you cheated on your boyfriend. I'll let him know. Like, don't you dare. And then this other girl came at me from the allocations committee. And she's like, I know what you're up to, Eddie. I know what you're up to. And I was like, fuck you. And her boyfriend's with her. And I'm looking at him. He's my fraternity brother. I'm like, I'm going to beat your ass. Like, why are you letting her do this to us? We're all having a great time.
Yeah, for real.
And she now works for Hillary Clinton.
They're all doing that shit.
Yeah. And I like see her on Facebook and I'm just like, fuck you. Fuck you. You ruined my skydiving club. So I got in trouble at the university, like, you know, and it was embarrassing. And then I finished, I graduated, but, you know, it was just like fail. And when I first did stand up, like I went to work for my dad and I failed. I couldn't, like, my dad's like, I'm giving you the business. And I'm like, I'm gonna run you into bankruptcy. Like, don't let me touch it. Like everything, I even like, my dad wanted me so badly to take over his company and he's got like an investment company. I was like, Dad, we both know this isn't gonna work. Like, you know, just I'm a nightmare. And I interned in Washington, D.C. for a senator and just got kind of removed from that. And I was like, literally like, what the fuck am I going to do? And I was like, maybe I'm just going to go out to Colorado and be a ski bum, you know, because I can do that. And I'll just like be a bartender or something. And because it was just failure after abject failure. So when I found stand up, I think my first open mic at the Funny Bone in Pittsburgh in Station Square. And then the first night they told me, they go, this isn't your first time. I'm like, yeah, it is. It's my first time. And I had that, like, the light hit me, the laughs came.
Yeah.
Some people have an awful first. I had an amazing first 5 minutes. I didn't get a bad one till like five in. But the first one, I was hooked. I was like, and they said, can you come back and host? After my
That's how I got it.
And I was like,
pay me $50.
That was it. I think I got $50.
Guess what? What year was that?
Yeah, it's pretty much
they still pay you $50, bro. They still pay $50.
Unbelievable that they get away with
it. They'll pay you $50.
It should be examined by the Department of Justice.
That's what the people that were looking into your goddamn fucking skydiving club should look into comedy clubs. That's what they should look into.
Every time I look at an opener or feature and they're coming with, I'm just like, what's wrong with you? Like, why would you go through this? This is not worth this pain that you're going to go through to get here.
50th show. I first time I did stand up, I was 20 years old. So 1993.
Oh, wow.
I
got paid. Started young.
But I did it for like five shows and then a bunch of life happened. I didn't do it. It really start again until 27.
Okay.
But the first time I really stepped foot, I did okay enough that they invited me back. And I would say by the third time they asked me to host and it was $50.
Was that in Maryland?
1993. Yeah, in Baltimore.
Where'd you go in?
This was a place that doesn't even exist anymore. Comedy it was called Factory. Winchester. Now, it was before. I was too. I didn't want even fucking with that. I went to this place called Winchester's that was above this Italian restaurant off of Water Street. And it's not there anymore. I stopped in recently, and the people in there didn't even know it was up there before. You know, I'm like, it was next door. I'm like, yeah, it was right here upstairs. Where you at? 93. I mean, what is that? 2003.
Wow.
I mean, we're coming up on 30 years. They're still paying people $50.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's not
but
right.
Anyway.
Yeah. So then quickly, I probably was a lot. I think I was better than I was, like we all do. I thought I was great. I probably sucked. I mean, I don't even want to see tapes of myself, but I'm probably so bad. But I had an ego. I had optimism. I was getting laughs. And people were booking me. Other comics were giving me shit right off the bat because they're like, who's this new guy that fucking thinks he, you know? And some of them were taking me in, some were. But after like, I don't know how many months, like 6 months, Lewis Black came through and he was headlining and I emceed for him. And he was like, what are you doing here? He's like, go to New York or LA. He's like, you're going to get on Saturday Night Live. He's like, you're young. You're like, you got to look. And I was just, I didn't know there was a world outside of Pittsburgh. I mean, I knew, but I didn't know comedy and I didn't know it was accessible. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, you go to New York or you go and you're going to go to auditions and you're going to. And I was like, And so I decided, I'm like, I'm going. And I went to New York and I mean, I hit my first audition ever. And it was like everything came so fucking easy that I started partying like crazy. And I was just, I remember in my head thinking, what's everybody talking about the show business being so hard? I was like, this is the easiest thing I've ever done. I go to an audition, I get it, and then they pay me. And like in the, you know, I paid my dues for a little bit, like a tiny little bit. in the beginning, you know, waited tables for like a week. Then I temped. Then I was a personal trainer. But like, I think within my first year, I was the host of Shark Week. And then I booked like three national spots on commercials. Yeah. So I had money coming in and I was just doing gigs, like going around. And then, you know, the clubs in New York started booking me. I got Montreal in 2000. So I'd only been doing comedy for like 3 years. I think I started in 96, so 4 years. And
I still haven't got Montreal.
Are you kidding me?
I've never been to Montreal. I'm not a Comedy Store regular. I've never been to Montreal, Aspen, back when that was a thing. None of that stuff.
But it's so funny how you're more successful than like 90% of the people that have done those.
I mean, maybe I am, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we all have our thing because there's things that get me that I still can't do. And I'm like, stop. Like, I try to just be grateful for what I have.
But it takes you years of being in this business to also realize, oh, that's just not for me.
Yeah, but you know, like, Dane Cook and, what's his name? Louis C.K. were never Comedy Store regulars.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. I just remember how many people Esty passed on at the Comedy Cellar, how many people, what's his name? I can't remember his name, at the comic strip was like the hardest thing, and everybody got fucking axed there. And then there were people that you're like, how does he work here? So it's just, you know, it's so subjective.
Yeah.
But
so things were moving swift and quick for you, and you thought it was going to be easy.
It got so easy. I swear to God.
I've never had a run where I thought that at all. Like, you realize now, though, right, obviously with hindsight, that you're lucky to even have that run something like that in this business.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. But I had no idea.
Right.
I was driving.
Which might be the best way to do this anyway.
I was driving fast. I was drinking all the time. I was driving so fast when I'd be out driving around, like 140 miles an hour, whatever, like that. I just felt like I needed a buzz in life because that wasn't even doing it anymore. Like, I started booking stuff and I was like, this is so easy. And I started going out on movie auditions. I get callbacks on this. I got a development deal. I had a development deal. I got put on a show on VH1. I got a pilot sold to FX, and I had a pilot with Comedy Central I was the host.
That's a good 10 years.
It all happened in like a year.
That's insane.
And it all crumbled within 6 months. Crumbled,
why?
It fucking,
what
the, happened? The development deal, my writer walked off to go work on, I think it was How I Met Your Mother or something. Mm-hmm. And he just had a better deal. He didn't like my show. He liked that show. And so he gave his money back and went to that show. Then the VH1 show got canceled. But my manager kind of fucked it up too. He was like negotiating and like asking for way too, and it's like VH1. They've got like $20. And he's like, I want flights to all his colleges and back so he can get back in time. I was making a really good living. I had a morning radio show on WNEW, which was Opie and Anthony were afternoons. I was mornings.
Damn.
Yeah, it was all like, and I'm like, 4 years into the business, the comics in New York wanted to murder me. And I was arrogant as fuck because I didn't know any better. And I remember I got in a fight with like Rich Voss one time. We were like arguing back and forth. And I love Rich and think he's one of the funniest guys in the world. But back then they picked on me so bad that I was just like, fuck all of them. I remember him just insulting me one night, like, you're not funny and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you want to compare bank accounts? And I was like,
yeah.
You want to, old man? You know, and I was like, that was my like, you're hurting me, I'm going to hurt you. And I remember like Patrice and all these guys just wanting to kill me for this. And I didn't know any better. And I was just like, doesn't this happen to everybody? Like, I thought they were all in my situation,
sure.
Kind of. Like, I saw Gaffigan doing all these commercials and Judah Friedlander, and I was like, I'd go out, I'd book a commercial. You know, like, I watch TV, and I'd sometimes have, like, two commercials on right after each other. And on top of it, I was living with my sister, who was, like, a Wall Street person, had this two-story apartment, and I didn't pay rent.
Oh, so God, fuck you. I want to say fuck you sitting here listening to this
right
now.
I was rich.
Yeah.
I was just out partying every night, spending tons of money. Like, it was like, I would go do a gig, and then I would go do a bunch of gigs. I worked really hard. I loved doing stand-up. I loved auditioning. But then I would just go out and party all night, like in the hot nightclubs, and I knew all these like models and everything. And then literally, when it crashed, they kept coming in like phone call after phone call. I remember in the development deal, I was like, so we just get another writer? And they're like, no, it's over. And I'm like, what do you mean it's over? And they're like, it's over. They're like, it's done. It's next season. And I was like, well, I still got all these other things. And then I get a call like VH1 canceled that show. And I was like, okay, I still got my pilot with Comedy Central. And they're like, Comedy Central's not picking up the pilot. And I was like, still sold the show to VH1. The show we sold to FX was a show about sneaking into places called Balls. Mm-hmm. Me and a bunch of friends made the show where we would gate crash things. 9/11 happens.
Oh, yeah, that ain't happening.
My manager, agent at the time, who's Baby Doll Dixon, Jimmy Kimmel's manager, he always talks. He calls me. He's like, it's over. I'm like, what is? He's like, your show. I go, no, I just talked to the producers. It's fine. He goes, no. Because you really think people in this environment want to see a bunch of guys sneaking into places? He's like, you're done. You're canceled. And I'm like, no, they told us we're not. And he goes, you want to bet? He goes, I'll bet you. And like 2 days later, he's like, I told you. So they canceled that. And then the only thing I had left, I was in Seinfeld's movie Comedian. Mm-hmm. And I'd had this really funny scene with Jerry where I introed Jerry and we kind of had this little tit for tat kind of thing. And they paid me. They called me. Hey, you're in Seinfeld's movie. Come down and pick up your check. The director I had done a commercial for. Hey, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm in this little documentary that's going to be in the movie theaters. I see Jerry's manager at a party one night and we're talking. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, I'm in the film. He goes, I go, yeah, I'm in the film. He says, no, you're not. I go, yeah, I got paid for it and everything. He goes, no, they just cut 18 minutes out. And I was like, I thought the way they were canceling this shit with the pilot with Comedy Central, I remember I thought it was terrible. I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. It's like the worst show. I don't want to talk about it badly because people are involved that like it, you know, and were involved and worked hard on it. But I knew it was bad. It was really fucking bad. They strapped a camera on me and it was called Strap On. And I, and I had to like go.
And you're supposed to gate.
I'd put the camera on other people and then I would talk through their ear. Mm-hmm. And there were some funny concepts to it, but it just wasn't executed. And it was, again, it was just a pilot. So maybe the show would have really worked out. But they were like, yeah, you're up against Dave Chappelle has a show and Colin Quinn has a show. And it's you. You're the three shows Comedy Central is going to decide. And I was like, well, I'm fucking out. And my manager was like, no, actually, you're the cheapest one. So you're probably going to get picked up. And then they were picking up one show. So then I get the call. He's like, yeah, they picked up two shows, just not yours. I was like, this just kept happening. Every time I start getting anxiety about seeing the phone ring.
I'll bet, man. And I was like,
I was waiting for my parents to call me to tell me they weren't my parents. Like,
you're adopted.
It was getting so bad that I swear to God, I started to get paranoid. And I thought I might be part of a reality show. This is how paranoid I got. And I thought, they're fucking with me. They're fucking with me right now. Somebody's filming me or there's something going on behind the scenes and it's all going to be like told, hey, this was like a show we were shooting and we were going to build you up and break you down. And I started to get weird and I was calling. And you know when you have that stink on you?
Mm-hmm.
I had that stink on me. So people I started calling were like, yeah, I got to go. And no one wanted, and my auditions started going away. My agents were like, didn't want me around. And I just felt like an abject failure, like everything. And I just was like in total fear. And I started going, where's my money? And I remember my girlfriend broke up with me. And like, it just started getting really, really fucking bad. And I went home and like I never took time off ever. I took 2 weeks and went on vacation in New Jersey with my family. And I sat and like, basically like, my dad's not a empathetic or sympathetic person at all, emotional. And I think I like cried to him. And I was like, I don't know what I did, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you haven't worked hard enough. You know, my dad's like, he's like, you work 40 hours a week? I'm like, I don't have to. He's like, you're going to be a failure for the rest of your life. He's like, you can't do this. And I was like, no, you don't understand my business. He's like, no, I know business. And all business, you have to work at least 40, at least to make the minimum. He's like, if you want to be successful, go work 80 hours a week. And I was just, I was in full panic mode because I didn't know where my next dollar was coming from. And I was starting to get broke because I lived off my development deal money and I wouldn't travel because I was like, hey, I got this money and blah, blah, blah. So all my dates went away and I just figured I'm getting a show and I have this. And when it went away quickly. And I still didn't have to pay rent. My sister was nice enough, but there was still, you know, you're living in New York City. Yeah. It's hard. And when I was at Montreal, I met a guy who was a British agent. And he goes to me, he was like, came up. He's like, hello, yeah, I find you very funny. And I was like, oh, well, thank you. You know, and I kind of mocked him. And he was like, would you like to come do some shows in England? And I was like, no, I would not. I'm going to be a Hollywood superstar. I don't know if you've heard. And he was like, well, here's my card if you would ever like to come. And I was sitting like, just like losing my mind. And I like picked up his card and I called him on the phone and I was like, hey, dude, I remember his name. His name was Danny Julian. I was like, can I come to England and do some shows? And he went, sure. I'll have this guy call you back with your dates and blah, blah, blah. And I get a call back and they're like, yeah, we're going to email your dates. And they're like, how long can you come? And I was like, how long do you want me? And they're like, 3 months. That's how long your visa is. I was like, okay. They send me back with 3 months of dates, like every day.
Damn.
And it was at the time they were paying about £200 a show.
Okay.
So that was about close to $400 at the time. So it was $400 like every night of the week and then double ups and triple ups on weekends. And I'm like, this is amazing. And I get to perform, which I love to do. And I don't have to do shit during the day. I can go drink beer. I was like, this is fucking awesome. And I go over the first weekends in Birmingham, England. I go to the Glee Club in Birmingham, England. I go on stage. They have me headlining. And I bomb so fucking hard. Like, so hard. My mouth goes dry. Like, I can't get words out. I'm going... And I'm trying to like talk and I can't talk. I can't remember any jokes. And I go in the green room and the stink that I had before is like I'd left the stink back in New York, but it flew over for that night. It was like,
it's on a red eye. Back.
We found them. We found them. And I'm in the green room and the comics were like they went from talking to me before the show to we're not talking to you anymore. And you only do one show. And I was just like, oh, I am fucking terrible.
Meeting with a therapist to work on your mental health is just as helpful as hiring a personal trainer to work on your physical health. And the positive impact can be just as life-changing. Talkspace makes it possible to speak with a licensed therapist right from your phone, tablet, or computer. And unlike traditional therapy, you can message your therapist anytime via text, video, or voice. It's 100% secure and stigma-free the way therapy should be. Look, I believe in therapy. I think it's important for everyone. We've all gone through some things in life, and not everyone can relate to that. So I agree wholeheartedly that we are all out there trying to cut up our abs and drop our double chins and boobs, everything else, and we're not out there working on our problems. You're the same person inside, no matter what you do on the outside. So I know a lot of stigma with it, and you know, especially with men, like, oh, my dad wasn't like that. Not so what? So what? Be your own man and go work on it if you need to work on it, all right? At Talkspace, your privacy and security are their number one priority. The app puts you in a private room with just you and your therapist. You can send messages 24/7 and get replies throughout the day. No need to wait for a weekly appointment. Talkspace's encryption and added security features keep your conversation fully protected. Join Talkspace today and start moving forward with a single message. Just visit Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month when you use the promo code HoneyDoIt Sign Up. That's $100 off at Talkspace.com. promo code HONEYDEW. The holidays are almost here, and for all of you who are trying to figure out what to get that person who means so much to you, I've got the perfect gift. Enzo rings. Look, these are it right here. These are stylish silicone rings with a soft, flexible fit. I'm wearing one right now. They're so much more comfortable and safer than wearing a metal ring, especially for anyone active or who works with their hands a lot. Comes in this cool little case like this. I'm really surprised by it. It's flexible. Look, I got fat knuckles. This thing went right over and it looks good. And don't, there's not just black, okay? So no matter what your taste are, Enzo Rings has you covered with a wide selection of stylish and fun collections like their Elements collection. It has an elegant look of real metal, but the benefits of silicone. Enzo Rings actually infuses real precious materials into the silicone. You can't find this in any other silicone ring brand. There's platinum, there's rose gold, there's diamond, there's pearl, there's even volcanic ash, and a lot more. Trust me, Enzo rings are a gift that they'll love. Check out Enzo's Elements rings and other bestsellers at my special URL, enzorings.com/honeydew. That's E-N-S-O rings.com/honeydew. And for a limited time, you'll get 10% off your first purchase of any collection when you use the promo code HONEYDEW. Don't wait. Lock in your holiday orders now and even get one for yourself. For 10% off, that's promo code HONEYDEW at enzorings.com/honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dew.
I wasn't suicidal. I've never been suicidal. But I was like, what do I do? Like, do I jump on like a cruise ship to Jamaica and just end up like being that guy that like cuts coconuts? And like, I gotta go somewhere. I just felt like this guy that I just failed so badly at Hollywood. And I felt like I had failed and it was over. Like Hollywood had said, you're out. You got your shot. You're done. You're never allowed back in. And here I am, like, new country, new start. Nah, not working here either.
First show.
And I went home, and they had me in a Holiday Inn that was, like, so fucking tiny. The room was small. The room with the bathroom was as small as this.
Damn.
And I'm in the room, and I have a breakdown. I fucking broke down. It was like the closest I've come to like a mental breakdown in my life. I bawled my eyes out. I was just like, I have no money. I have no girlfriend. My girlfriend had dumped me. I remember like right before that, my radio show had got, well, I left the radio show because they were going to fire me. And I was like, I'm going to Hollywood and I got this and this and this. Like I thought I sold a script. Like, and, it was just, I'm in that hotel room and I'm like, what am I doing? I'm in a foreign country alone. I was over 30. So I'm like, all my friends are getting married, having kids. Yeah. I don't have a dollar in the bank. I don't have a girlfriend. I have just fucked up so badly. And I was like, I've just made the biggest mistake that my parents were trying to tell me was going to happen. And I didn't listen to them. And here I am. And they had warned me, like, don't go into entertainment. Don't do this. Come work here. And I was like, fucking, they were right. I thought I knew better than them. And I'm a loser for the rest of my life. And there's a funny story that I've done a bit about it. I pulled out a newspaper and just started reading this, like, random newspaper that they put outside your room. And I started reading about 9/11 and the news. I was like, I got to do anything because I didn't have the internet then.
You were in England when 9/11 happened?
No, I was in New York when 9/11 happened. But this was, like, after 9/11. I think it was the year anniversary.
Okay.
And so it'd be, like, this was 2002 when I'm in England. And I'm in this hotel room in Birmingham. And I pull out this newspaper to just read it to get my mind off my nervous breakdown. And I read this article about, it was talking about all these people that died in 9/11, it's a year anniversary. And they interviewed this one guy that lost his wife who was a flight attendant. And he said, I'm reading the article. And right away I went, all right, time to screw my head on straight. Here are these people that have like the most horrific thing that's ever fucking happened. And I'm complaining because a bunch of people booed me. They did boo me off.
You actually booed?
Oh, they booed me off the stage. They booed me off. Oh, it got louder and louder and louder.
They say, "Bah!" What's a boo sound like? Well,
pretty sure it started as hissing, and then it went to booing, And then it went to just me slithering off stage.
Oh, shit.
But I'm like, I don't have it so bad. You know, like I got to put my head on straight.
Yeah.
So I'm reading more, and the guy says that he lost his wife. She was one of the flight attendants in one of the planes. He goes, they had a great life together, and he was happy for that. He goes, one of the things about their relationship, they always laughed, how important laughter was. And I was like, oh, you know, that's what I try to do. I try to make people laugh. And then he said, their last night together before she died, before she was on the plane, they were at a comedy club. And they were at a comedy club, and he said he was just glad that they had that night together because she was laughing so hard, tears were coming out of her eyes. And he had mentioned that he was stand-up New York, because I think she flew out to Boston, then flew back. I forget what it was, because I think she was on the flight that came from Boston. And he said he was glad that they had that night together, because that's what he'll always remember, is just like her laughing. So I had a Palm Pilot at the time. I open up my Palm Pilot. I'm on all, my manager at the time was, at that time was Kerry Hoffman from Stand Up New York. I worked his club constantly. And I'm like, Stand Up New York, I always work Stand Up New York. That's weird, they were there. I open up the date, I look, I worked all three shows.
Hell yeah.
And I'm like, this
that's
is
great.
And I don't believe in I believe in coincidence. And I'm like, wait a minute. This could be like something from that, something saying.
It's bigger than a coincidence.
Yeah, I'm like, this is a sign that something's like, that this is, and then I just started to gain perspective. I'm like.
You are like, his wife's dead, my career's dead, yeah. I should just wrap this shit.
I'm killing people. Not only is my career dying, but anybody that sees me is dying. The last club I paid, I found out the Glee Club at Jonglers burned down, or at Birmingham burned down after I left. Everybody in it. No, I was like, it honestly was that little thing that I went, okay, change your perspective. It's not about the money and the success and the partying and the girls and the fucking this and that. It's about, why did you start this? You wanted, I honestly wanted to make people laugh. I love making people laugh. That's why I did it. So I was like, just fucking make people laugh. And I was like, that's all this is about. And I don't give a shit if I make another dollar. I don't give a fuck about whatever it is. And I remember I was going home to like my, I forget if it was like my 10 year, I think it was my 10 year, 15 year, I forget, high school,
Reunion.
And I was like so worried about going home and just doing everybody going like, what are you doing? Nothing.
Yeah,
nothing. And so I go the next night, I got to go to the Glee Club and perform in Birmingham. And they've moved me to feature. They've bumped me down from headliner.
No.
And I find out all my dates have changed now that I'm no longer the headliner.
After one show.
Yeah. And I'm like, and they were like, oh, it's okay. You're still going to get paid the same amount, but we just think maybe it'd be better if you go on before the, and I was like, oh, fuck. So I get a little angry, and it was a lot of like, this is right around the war. So it was a lot of like, oh, you fucking American, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm mad now. And I go on stage, and instead of being like, I'm sorry, I'm an American, I went on stage and I went, I'm an American. And they went, boo. And I go, boo, boo, you got fucking blood on your hands too. You're over in fucking Iraq and Afghanistan with us. And I'm like, you fucking boo me, you fucking dumb fuck. And I just start hammering them. And all of a sudden, you know, like they start coming around.
The Bill Burr Philly thing.
Yeah, it was the same exact jokes that I got booed on. They start clapping, stomping, going berserk. And it was, to this day, one of the best sets I've ever had. I went from the worst set I've ever had to one of the best sets I've ever had. And I walk off stage, and you know, they do intermissions and everything. I go to the green room, I'm all happy, you know, like, I'm not going to get sent home. I was thinking I was getting sent home. And I'm like, they're not going to send me home. I'm in the green room, and the MC goes, Tony Law, I know the guy still to this day. He goes, Eddie Ift. The crowd's steer and they're stomping on the ground. Boom, 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 boom. And I don't know what, we don't do that. And he's going, Eddie Ift. And they're stomping. And I'm like, and he goes, Eddie Ift. And I'm like, what the fuck's happening? So he comes, he runs into the green room and he grabs me, he pulls me outside.
Oh, they wanted you to come out.
They wanted me to do an encore, which they do in the UK and Australia, but we don't do that. So I didn't know.
So you're doing 5 more minutes?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
something?
You do. So I come out on stage, they're all standing. I'm getting a standing ovation. I walk out on stage and I go, I wave and I walk off stage. So the crowd that was like so excited for me to come back out, I just insult them again. I go, and I walk off. So then he closes the show down for the intermission or whatever. And he comes back and he goes, what the fuck? Why wouldn't you encore? And I go, huh? He goes, why didn't you encore? They went, I'm like, encore? What? Like a band? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, you're supposed to do like 5 more minutes. And I was like, oh. I go, well, I already did my best shit.
I don't have it.
I didn't have any. I didn't have anything
slow
good.
Down next time.
I didn't have anything good left anyways for
so I can
them.
Keep like, my shit for the last time.
They would have been very unhappy with that encore.
Can we do a Q&A here? Yeah.
So I do that was the weekend. The next weekend, I'm back to headlining. And okay. I was like, okay. I survived the switch. And my agent told me, he was like, yeah, we were a little worried. You know, the club called and said how bad it went and blah, blah, blah. But I went home with this like newfound kind of like, I worked in England for like 3 months and just had the best fucking time. And was just all about comedy. It's all I cared about. I didn't give a shit about auditions. I didn't care of TV. I didn't money, nothing. It was just like they would wire money into my account. And it was all about, a comic in England said it to me once. I was like, so how do we get on TV over here? And he's like, why would you want to get on TV? I'm like, it's what we do in America. He's like, you're performing live every night. You're getting paid well. Why do you want more? And I was like, because he's like, you're so American. And I was like, yeah, like, why do I want more? This is awesome. This is amazing. Like, why should I want anything else other than this? So I came back to America with that attitude of like, I'm just going to try to be a really good comic. That's what I'm going to try to do and not listen to anybody else and blah, blah, blah. And the joke I tell on stage is I contacted the dude who was in that article.
Man, I was hoping I was going to ask you. Okay, good.
So I wanted to let him know out of the terrible tragedy, like this little bit of good happened, that I was continue performing and like going around all over the world trying to make people laugh just so like there'd be laughter in life. And so I contacted the guy and the guy agreed to meet me for coffee. And so when I showed up.
Where were you meeting?
Upper West Side. So he was from the Upper West. That's why he was at Stand Up New York. When I showed up at the coffee shop, it was outside. I walk up and right outside the fence, I'm outside the fence. He goes, oh my God.
No.
He's like, I totally remember you from the show.
Oh, I got chills, dude. Oh, that's fucking awesome.
He goes, you're the one guy my wife didn't like.
Well, whatever. It changed your goddamn life. You're the one.
And I was like, she was probably at the like early show. I'm better on the late show. So.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah. And you know what? It hasn't gotten any better. I mean, I've had ups and downs since then, and it still happens. It's like, I mean, you know, we all know.
I always think back to, I don't know if you've seen her documentary, but the Joan Rivers documentary. Yeah. There's two moments that really stand out in that. One was she had her like day runner and she would just show like months of blank pages, months of blank pages. And then the other one is, I still laugh about it. It's one of the funniest things. It was her manager at the time was saying that he also had managed Richard Pryor. And it was that whole, like, we don't know what the, look, I need to eat tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I need to eat tomorrow, not pay bill. I need to fucking eat, have a place to, a roof over my head. And he was like, okay, Richard. And I'm paraphrasing, but it was something like, you know, first year or two, we're going to work on some stand up, get you in doing some TV spots and specials. Year three, maybe we'll get you into the movies. Year four, year five. And he was like, look, man, that all sounds great. But what the fuck are we going to do about Monday? And it has just, that is, I'm like, yes, that is the hustle mentality.
Yeah.
Like, and all that sounds fucking great, but what are we doing about Monday?
I felt like everyone I worked with in this business was like that too. And, you know, I'd go to these agencies and they'd be like turning down all this work for me because they're like, no, we can't take that money. We have to get big money for you. And I'm like, but no one's paying it.
Right.
And they're like, just sit and wait and it'll come. Be patient. And I'm like, I can't fucking be patient.
Yeah.
And then they're like, you got to stay in town for the auditions. And I'm like, I can't. I got to go to this gig. I got to go get this. And they're like, oh, can't you borrow money? I'm like,
right?
No. Have you seen, you know, like, have you seen my credit? You know, yeah. Like, no comic can borrow money. No comic. You know, I guess there are some guys out there that have rich parents. And when they do, like, my parents were probably upper middle class. They wouldn't give me a fucking dollar. My dad said, if you're going to do this, you do it on your own and don't ever come to me for a dollar, and never gave me a dollar. And I never went to him because out of pride. So I would, like, when I first lived in New York City, when I first got there before, like, I got my commercial, I would have no money. I would take the bottles and cans from our parties and take them in to get the money to go buy lunch that day. And, you know, because no one was paying me to do stand-up at that point. And it was just such a struggle.
I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about you being the only guy she fucking hated. I can't stop.
It's kind of the story of my life.
And then you got to sit and have coffee with the guy.
Yep.
You're walking up and he hits you with that. Yeah. Then you got to sit
there. I remember you. You're the guy that... Yeah.
Dude. All right. First of all, thank you for doing this.
All right, thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me get the therapy.
You got it, brother. I do want to ask you, it's your first time here. I ask everybody advice you'd give to your 16-year-old self. Like, knowing what you know, what we just talked about now, going back, what would you definitely tell 16-year-old Eddie Ift?
It's funny you ask me because when I leave here, I've got a phone conversation with a friend's son who is 15 years old who wants to be a comedian. And I'm giving him, like, some advice. He wants to be like an SNL writer, performer kind of thing. And I auditioned for SNL like 3 years into comedy, which I shouldn't have. Or I should have gone balls out. I was so in my head about that. Like, I'm not ready for this. I'm not funny enough for this, blah, blah, blah. And so I just killed myself. I either should have gone into it like, I'm the funniest fucking guy in the world, or I got to wait till I am the funniest guy in the world. But I would say, you know, 16-year-old me, I just say, you're going to get knocked down a million times. And it's just like Rocky. Just, you got to get up and you just got to fight because it's life. It's like, you know, I've just dealt with, you know, a death in the family. I'm put it this way. It's like the best of my life right now is the best it's ever been.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's the worst it's ever. I mean, my mom just passed. But I love my wife. I love my kids. I love where I live. I love my friends. But like, then I'll get like, I just had bronchitis where I was coughing and thought I was fucking dying of like something. And, you know, you're going to get hit every day with good shit and you're going to get hit every day with bad shit. My dad always says life's running hurdles on a treadmill uphill.
And, amen to that.
And if you stop, the hurdles are going to hit you and knock you down. So you just got to keep jumping over them. And you're just going to be at a level, and wherever that level is, just be happy at that level because the levels are going to change. And if you decide you can only be happy at a high level, then you're going to be fucking miserable.
Yeah.
So find happiness wherever you are and just get ready for struggles and get through them because the good times are going to come back again. And it's going to go good. It's going to go bad. It's going to go good. And you know, this business, just keep flipping over the stones because who knows? Who
this
fucking
shit didn't
knows?
Even exist when we started.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I never knew. I never wanted this. I kind of love this for a reason, for that. But it wasn't what I wanted. So I still sometimes have that mentality of like, when am I getting my sitcom? And I'm like, it's not coming anymore. The last development deal meeting I went on, in the middle of it, they looked at me and they went, is it a deal breaker if you don't star in the show?
You mean in the Eddie If story?
Yeah. And I was like, so I'm out. And they were like, is it a deal breaker? And I went, at first I was so butthurt. I was like about to get up and be like, are you kidding me? You came to my show, you saw what I do, and you don't, you want to buy my concept. You don't, it's me. And then 2 seconds into that, it quickly kicked in. I'm like, wait, you mean I'm never going to have to study lines? I don't have to put makeup on? I don't have to sit in a trailer all the time?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you just gave me my dream job. And I was like,
I call mailbox money.
And I said, I go, oh, it's kind of a deal breaker if you make me be in the show. I was like, can we do it that I don't want to be in the show? And they were like, yeah. And then afterwards, everybody's like, hold on, slow down. And I was like, no, I really don't think I love hanging out with my kids, and I don't want to be away from them all the time. And I don't want to, I don't want to miss out in life.
Yeah.
Like I would love to make a great TV show, but I don't want to be on set 24 hours a day and filming and going into late night. I go, I don't enjoy acting enough.
Yeah.
So.
Well, dude, thank you for doing this.
Hey, thank you. I love it.
Again,
I love your show.
Promote everything you'd like.
Yeah. Go, my special, come to the Taping Irvine Improv, January 22nd. Tickets are going to go on sale soon because I got to fill it for two shows, and that's a big room to do it. And then my newest album's out. It's called Sweet Home Alabama, and it's available on YouTube and everywhere else, iTunes, Amazon. And then also my tour is at eddieif.com, so I'll be everywhere. And if you're into working out, I do a podcast called Wadcast. I know I don't look like it, but I do. I work out constantly. I'm hurt always.
All right, brother. Thank
you. Hey, thank you.
Again,
thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And as always, Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.